Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go in what I hope, but cannot in any wise guarantee, will be a buffering-free edition of the program. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. And that's where you go if you'd like to be part of the real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza of wacky, zany carryings-on that happens every evening when the program is live from 6 to 9 p.m. in the Horn chat room. Just click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, jump in where you will be immediately greeted by Hoghead and Laborman and Stockton Larry and B.T. Blom, all capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has folded space this evening to become man cave because it's apparently nicer in Northern California than it is in Central West Virginia. It's a mite brisk. We got up to about 55 degrees today. Kind of gray and kind of crappy at the moment. And it's going to be that way through like Monday or so. I don't know. It happens. You don't put your tomatoes or your squash or anything like that in the ground until after Mother's Day, and that's this Sunday. After that, you kind of hope you can count on some decent weather around here. But nobody cares, though. This is the 9th day of May, 2017. I got that right. Yep, 9th day of May, 2017. Program's live, and, this is one of those days. And as one of those days go, it's Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday being those days we reserve for Titanic full speed ahead into the iceberg manifestations of right-wing intellect. And, that's the way I search for stuff. That's the mindset I put myself in. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. When Tuesdays roll around, and then something happens and everything changes at the last minute, and you go, fuck. Right, so that happened. Namely, about 4 minutes before the program started, the news flashed across the screen that Comrade Kumquat has fired James Comey, the director of the FBI. News coverage is going to be nothing but, it's going to be all Comey all the time for the next 24 to 48 to maybe 72 hours now. With lots of punditry, and so there's really not a lot of point in me saying anything about it, except to maybe note the one thing that occurred to me, and that is that insofar as Democrats were having a hard time being in love with Comey, well, this just kind of makes sense, because the other thing that's going on is that Comey was at the head of what he indicated last week was probably two separate investigations of the Trump-Russia connection in front of maybe two separate grand juries from the way he talked. And so the Tangerine Tiberius administration knows the heat is on. And so this does have a little bit of the flavor of the Nixonian era Saturday night massacre. And it was easy to do because it's going to be hard for all the Democrats who said, well, you know, Comey kind of gave the election to Trump with his October surprise, blah, blah. And so they will be seen as hypocritical if they rush out now to defend him as some sort of martyr to a Trumpian Stalinist purge. I'm going to leave it at that. I don't think there's, that makes as much, it was just easy to do. So why not? And now maybe we'll get, given the way he was a-talking with his mouth eater yesterday, maybe the Clementine Caligula can nominate, Louisiana Senator John Kennedy. Senator Sorghums to be the director of the FBI and work in tandem with Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III to administer something that they consider justice in the United States. But, well, the rest of us can know what it is, but it involves sheets and pillowcases with holes cut in them. Right. So this, and just to put the number update out there at the beginning of the program. We thanks very kindly to Paul and Brother Deacon Gerald and Khalil. We managed to not be a complete goose egg last night, and so we actually have ciphering only $340 to raise this evening. And that it would be nice if we could do that because I am I'm getting worn out by repair. Oh my God. Suffice to say, please, if we could raise that $340, it would be really helpful. Five at a time, 10 at a time, I don't care. And just a general reminder, there are a whole lot more people who listen to the horn than contribute to it. And that's fine because it's free. It really is free. Nobody has ever been charged anything for this program. Access to the podcast, access to the live stream, access to the rerun stream, doesn't matter. Nobody ever gets charged. We're not selling anything. Because we are not in the let's make anybody a millionaire business. It's simply a matter of the people who find some value in this program supporting it when they can, if they can. If you can't, don't feel bad and don't hurt yourself, okay? Seriously. That having been said, the fundraising goal is what the fundraising goal is. If you want to do it by PayPal, you know the buttons over it and under the contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. If you'd like to become one of only three subscribers on this day of the month, that would be mighty welcome. Just check the little box. Or if you'd just like to help out this evening, that'd be great too. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, you can send checks and money orders to the Echo Chamber at the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, West Virginia 25801. Okay. Where to go? I mean, if you want to talk about the Comey thing later in the program, we can certainly do that. Let's flesh it out just one wee little bit. I can at least share with you. He's been terminated and removed from office. President Trump, General Rod Rosenstein, and attorney, respected, cherished? It will mark a new beginning for our crown jewel of law. A search for a new permanent FBI director will begin immediately. Yeah, let's do, like I said, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but, you know, words mean things. Based on the clear recommendations of both Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein and Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Well, gosh, why would you need the recommendations, clear or opaque, one way or the other? Why would you, of both the Attorney General and the Deputy Attorney General? Why? Think. Well, when you consider that, because he met with Ambassador Kislyak as well during when he was a surrogate for the campaign, and the fact that Attorney General Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III was conflicted out of anything dealing with the Trump Russia investigation, well, he could. He can't. Sessions can't offer any advice about what to do with Comey. So they had to include Rosenstein because Rosenstein is actually the guy. And granted, he was only confirmed last week. Rosenstein is the guy who's actually in charge of the Trump Russia investigation right now. Reassuring, isn't it? So what does that say? Well, it says that the considerations for firing Comey had to do with not only, now their stated reason is, well, you know, he misstated the number of crooked Hillary's emails in his Senate testimony. That's what he did. Well, you know what? If that's the only reason you're getting rid of him, you don't need Rod Rosenstein. If, however, your motive for getting rid of him has something to do with the Trump-Russia investigation, you do need Rod Rosenstein. See how it works? This bunch, will happily... they just admitted that the Trump-Russia investigation had something to do with why Comey was fired. Beautiful, isn't it? So, that's really as much as... That's as much as there really is to say. I guess somebody else on Twitter R.L. Miller, who heads the California Democratic Environmental Caucus, says, between the lines, Comey was fired for not prosecuting Hillary Clinton. Wow. Then why is Rod Rosenstein in the conversation? Meanwhile, Steve in New York says, it's called panic. And understand, of course, that panic was also what drove the Saturday night massacre. Mm-hmm. Yeah, labor man in the chat room says, smokescreen, Bob, more shiny object over here, folks. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, we can talk about that later in the program if you want to. But there is other stuff, and being as how it's Titanic Tuesday, other Titanic stuff that we can take under take into consideration. Like the fact that, you know, since the inauguration on January 20th, there's been a lot of purging going on. Remember the purge of the ambassadors before the inauguration ever even took place? Yeah. Well, there's a purge over at the EPA. Some 8 members of the Scientific Advisory Board have been sacked, and more may be coming. The Scientific Advisory Board doesn't actually make policy or set policy or anything like that. They have no authority where the approval of a regulation is concerned. They have no review authority over regulations. They don't even make recommendations with regard to regulations. What they do is provide scientific advice to the administrator of the EPA. They're part of the EPA Office of Research and Development. Well, starting in the EPA is a central part of the Trump plan to, you know, drown the government in a bathtub. Late in March, the House passed something called the EPA Science Advisory Board Reform Act of 2017. It makes certain assumptions about the Scientific Advisory Board that exists already and says that no, the Scientific Advisory Board needs to be a well-balanced expert panel. It will increase transparency, public participation to empower the SAB to provide meaningful and unbiased scientific advice and better responsiveness to the public and Congress. So guess who's going to replace the purged members of the Scientific Advisory Board? Members of industry. You know, frackers. Mountaintop removers, coal gougers, oil drillers, pipeline builders, polluters of every shape, size, variety. I mean, let's say that you had a baker's advisory board and you wanted to make it more friendly to the industry. Maybe you'd get rid of some of the bakers on the Baker's Advisory Board and put on bakery owners who don't give a good goddamn about the bakers themselves and couldn't bake a loaf of bread with the recipe in front of them and the dough already rising. They just know they want more money out of the bakeries. And they want the Baker's Advisory Board to quit sitting there saying that we need to use 100% flour and not have any pencil shavings in there. When in fact, pencil shavings, if you put in about a third, 25% pencil shavings, nobody can taste them anyway. What's the difference? So, you know, Comey's not alone. Not by a long shot. What else on this Titanic Tuesday? Well, this is a beautiful little moment. We know who Energy Transfer Partners are. They're the folks who own the Dakota Access Pipeline, remember? Wait a minute. Carol noting, I was fired from the Baker's Advisory Board. I wasn't producing enough dough for the Trump Organization. Now I'm just Carol. No last name. Oh, superiorly played. Carol Not a Baker, which is not to be confused with Sugar Baker. Carol Not a Baker. Here's hoping that doesn't stick. And by the way, Carol pointed out, now Trump will get to appoint the FBI director who will investigate Trump's Russia connection. Isn't that fun how that works? Isn't that just darling? And Jeremy just pointed out, the firing came only hours after a senator said, we now have irrefutable evidence of collusion with Russian assets. You would think there might be some holes developing below the waterline of the good ship Trump. But that's okay. They'll just stuff them with uninsured Americans and everything will be fine. Because the second coming of Jesus H. Christ would not move this House of Representatives toward impeachment because they, frankly, the Republican majority, frankly, does not give a good goddamn about the United States of America or anything resembling patriotism or love of country, mom, apple pie. Hell no! They care about tax cuts. They care about gutting anything resembling a social safety net. They care about destroying anything in the way of social programs. And leaving the government, about the only thing the government would do is make sure that we keep having enough bombs to kill brown people whenever we feel so compelled. Yeah. But anyway, Energy Transfer Partners. Yeah. They not only own the Dakota Access Pipeline, they're building something called the Rover Pipeline. Here, Rover. Here, get it. Yep, get the... Yep, carry the oil. Carry the oil, Rover. It's a good puppy, Rover. The Rover Pipeline it runs through Ohio and West Virginia and is designed to... You carry hydrocarbons. And they just got fined. Granted, Energy Transfer Partners can write this and write a check for this and not even bother to enter it in the ledger. They just got fined $430,000 for inadvertently polluting wetlands in the state of Ohio south of Cleveland. Wetlands that are pristine. Or as pristine as something south of Cleveland can be. I mean, Jesus Christ, you want to talk about a put-upon place? Cleveland. Back in the late 60s, the Cuyahoga River caught fire a couple of times. And now, by the way, that inadvertent discharge. That inadvertent discharge was an inadvertent discharge of 2 million gallons of goo, described as a clay-like substance that they use for drilling into wetlands. Ah! Yeah. The spokesman for the Ohio EPA, which is a job-killing state-based organization that very seldom does its job, James Lee, when interviewed by Think Progress, said, it's a tragedy in that we would anticipate this wetland won't recover to its original condition for decades. And had Energy Transfer Partners more carefully followed best practices and been prepared to respond to the bentonite release, bentonite is what you call the mud, this likely would not have occurred on the scale that we are dealing with now. Mm-hmm. Inadvertent. Here's a question. How can it be inadvertent when it happened because Energy Transfer Partners was not more carefully following best practices. Huh? I know. 'Tis a puzzlement. Energy Transfer Partners claims that bentonite is a non-toxic, naturally occurring material that is safe for the environment. They went on to say that the discharge of 2 million gallons of this stuff isn't in any way dangerous or deleterious to the environment. But just the same, they also wrote a letter to the Ohio EPA, or made an argument to them that says that the Ohio EPA doesn't have the authority to enforce violations of water pollution control statutes. They can't fine us $430,000. They don't have the authority to, even though the Clean Water Act and the EPA has delegated that authority to the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. It's just mud. But while we're at it, let's point out that the director of the Ohio EPA is Craig Butler. And he said Energy Transfer Partners has also engaged in impermissible open burning and other air pollution violations. Right. And yes, it's a gas pipeline designed to carry 3.25 billion cubic feet of gas daily from the frackscapes of that area. And it'll go through West Virginia, Ohio, and up to Ontario, the province of Ontario in Canada. Isn't that inspiring? It's just mud. And never mind that it'll be decades before the area returns to anything resembling normal. Energy Transfer Partners says it's perfectly normal for areas to be covered in drilling mud. Sure. They've had 18 mud spilling incidents with this pipeline since drilling in March. A spokesman for Energy Transfer Partners, speaking to the Columbus Dispatch, said, "Well, you know, there's always going to be a few of these little inadvertent drilling mud releases. Not unusual at all. And we're pretty sure they hasn't been any impact to the environment." Kind of reminded me of this little exchange from Clark and Daw. Great moment in environmental comedy.
ATP and...
Yeah. This had to do with a coal ship falling apart off the Australian coast. It's a short piece, but a good giggle.
It's a great pleasure, thank you.
This ship that was involved in the incident off Western Australia this week...
Yeah, the one the front fell off?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not very typical. I'd like to make that point.
Well, how is it untypical?
Well, there are a lot of these ships going around the world all the time, and very seldom does anything like this happen. I just don't want people thinking that tankers aren't safe.
Was this tanker safe?
Well, I was thinking more about the other ones.
The ones that are safe?
Yeah, the ones the front doesn't fall off.
Well, if this wasn't safe, why did it have 80,000 tonnes of oil on it?
Well, I'm not saying it wasn't safe. It's just perhaps not quite as safe as some of the other ones.
Why?
Well, some of them are built so the front doesn't fall off at all.
Well, wasn't this built so the front wouldn't fall off?
Well, obviously not.
How do you know?
Well, because the front fell off and 20,000 tonnes of crude oil spilled into the sea caught fire. It's a bit of a giveaway. I just like to make the point that that is not normal.
Well, what sort of standards are these oil tankers built to?
Oh, very rigorous maritime engineering standards.
What sort of thing?
Well, the front's not supposed to fall off for a start.
And what other things?
Well, there are regulations governing the materials that they can be made of.
What materials?
Well, cardboard's out.
And?
No cardboard derivatives.
Like paper?
No paper. No string, no sellotape.
Rubber?
No, rubber's out. They've got to have a steering wheel. There's a minimum crew requirement.
What's the minimum crew?
Oh, one, I suppose.
So the allegation's that they're just designed to carry as much oil as possible, and
hell with
the consequences. I mean, that's ludicrous.
Absolutely ludicrous. These are very, very strong vessels.
So what happened in this case?
Well, the front fell off in this case, by all means, but it's very unusual.
But Senator Collins, why did the front book fall off?
Well, a wave hit it.
A wave hit it?
A wave hit the ship.
Is that unusual?
Oh, yeah. At sea. Chance in a million.
So what do you do to protect the environment in cases
well,
like this?
Well, the ship was towed outside the environment.
Into another environment?
No. It's being towed beyond the environment.
Yes,
not in the environment.
But from one environment to another environment.
No, it's beyond the environment. It's not in an environment. It has been towed beyond the environment.
Well, what's out there?
Nothing's out there.
Well, there must be something out
there. There is nothing out there. All there is sea and birds and fish.
And?
And 20,000 tonnes of crude oil.
And what else?
And a fire.
And anything else?
And the part of the ship that the front fell off. But there's nothing else out there.
Senator Collins, thanks for joining us.
It's a complete void.
Yeah, we're out of time.
The environment's perfectly safe. We're out of time?
Yeah.
Can you book me a cab?
But didn't you come in a Commonwealth car?
Yes, I did. But
what happened?
Well, the front fell off.
Brilliant. There's never a bad time for that sketch. But it dovetails so nicely with the AP report. Company spokesman tells the Columbus Dispatch that a small number of inadvertent releases of drilling mud aren't unusual during drilling operations. He also said Monday that the company doesn't think there's been any impact to the environment. Well, how is it there wasn't any impact to the environment? Well, you know, the mud didn't land in the environment. What did it land in? Oh, some wetlands. More mud. It was just more mud. Mud got released into mud. Okay? I mean, it's not like it's an environment. And I think we've had quite enough of EPA spokesman, Ohio EPA spokesman James Lee, saying that this is a tragedy and the area won't, and the wetland won't recover to its original condition for decades. It's in its original condition, damn it! It's a wetland. Wetlands have mud in it. Now there's more mud. Do we understand now? I mean, so what if it's 2 million gallons of, mud? Pipeline drilling mud. That couldn't possibly have anything but just more mud in it. I mean, it's perfectly safe. You can let your children play in it. You're soaking in it. It's just mud. It's bentonite. Damn tree huggers getting all upset. Glenn provides a little clarity. Bentonite is a swelling clay that is used for plugging. It's clay. I mean, you could probably send in some hippie artists and they could, it's clay. They could like make pots and tea kettles and oddly shaped cups and plates that aren't particularly round and are kind of bumpy and your fork will scrape across them. I mean, it's clay. It's not pollution, damn it. Yeah. I know. Meanwhile, the controversy over the Bears Ears National Monument in southeastern Utah continues. It's a controversy because some people like the fact that this beautiful, pristine area, which doesn't yet have a few million gallons of drilling mud on it, but probably has some coal under it, and we sure would like to blow it. What the hell is a... It's not even real bears. They're not going to miss any goddamn ears made of rock, for Christ's sakes. Blow it up! Some people like having natural spaces. Other people like having spaces that they can blow the hell out of to get it coal and gas and, you know, make some money for some corporate gazillionaires. One of those people would be older than Mudd, Utah Senator Orrin Hatch, who, in discussing a review pursuant to an executive order from the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, in the course of discussing that review by Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke, Orrin Hatch white-splained, is that the word? Mountain Meadows splained? How the Indians, you know, the simple, noble savages, didn't really understand what the government was doing when it turned bears' ears into a national monument. Now, bear in mind, a five-tribe coalition had gathered together to support the bears' ears national monument because they couldn't any other way protect what they deemed to be sacred ground for those five tribes. Speaking on Sunday, this is going to be your first hockey puck warning of the evening. It's just amazing. Speaking on Sunday, Orrin Hatch said, the Indians, they don't fully understand that a lot of the things that they currently take for granted on those lands, they won't be able to do if it's made clearly into a monument or a wilderness. Orrin, buddy, it's already been made into a monument. Well, not really, because it was done by that Kenyan Muslim usurper. Right. Hey, once you put a monument there... Put a monument there? This is going to drive Mike in Cascadia into running around in the yard tearing at his hair and clothing. Once you put a monument there, what does Orrin Hatch think they're going to do at Bears Ears? Put up a giant statue of the Kenyan Muslim usurper? Once you put a monument there, you do restrict a lot of things that could be done, and that includes the use of the land. Just take my word for it. Now, when he says use of the land, one of the things that pissed off, and the people who were pissed off by this, included the Cloven Bundy clan. Let me tell you a little bit about the Negro. And they were infuriated because they couldn't drive their four-wheelers all over it and gouge the living shit out of that delicate ecosystem with their four-wheeling... with their freedom protectors strapped onto the side as if the four-wheeler was a horse from the olden days. No. Once you put a monument there, you do restrict a lot of things that could be done, and that includes use of the land. Just take my word for it. Right. Here's the problem. Even though Orrin Hatch apparently thinks the native people, the indigenous people who know that land better than any white guy ever will, even though he thinks that they are simple savages who do not understand the complex ways of the white man in getting at profit-making hydrocarbons. Well, no, they do. Willie Gray Eyes is chairman of the board of the Utah Bikaya. And statement, and he said, it is offensive that some people think that Americans do not have a will of their own. Native American people understand the special and sacred landscapes at Bears Ears National Monument, pleased with the language used in the proclamation. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering, the proclamation specifically stated, the department will, quote, ensure the protection of Indian sacred sites and traditional cultural properties in the monument and provide access by members of Indian tribes for traditional, cultural, and customary uses, including collections of medicines, berries, and other vegetation, forest products, and firewood for personal, non-commercial use. This has, of course, not slowed down any Republicans, because the truth never does slow them down. Utah Governor Gary Herbert, who wants Bears Ears to be mined, drilled, fracked, blasted, anything that can be done to get some hydrocarbons out of it for his buddies. He says that tribal activities, well, the tribes couldn't gather firewood there. And Senator Mike Lee, known to the Republican circles as a constitutional scholar, but not known as that to anybody else, because he isn't. He's a constitutional scholar the way my, and frankly this is offensive to my granddaughter, the way my 10-year-old granddaughter is a constitutional scholar. My 10-year-old granddaughter may be more of a constitutional scholar than Mike Lee. Mike Lee said, oh, the government's going to seize Native American land for the monument. Meanwhile, a state legislator in Utah named Mike Noel, he wants an investigation. He's investigating him some Indians. He wants to know why they're supporting the Bears Ears National Monument. The desire of these indigenous people to protect sacred lands, he deems to be a charade. As the saying goes, watch this space, Bears Ears. The review report from Interior Secretary Zinke will be due in June. We can all probably already guess what's going to be in the review. Yes, yes. Okay, so I'm getting a report here and there of some buffering. Sorry about it. I'm being told that we have a hardware issue in the server, and it is a new server is being provisioned. So there may be some issues. I don't know. So let me just make this clear. Apparently, I can't upload the podcast to the server right now. For my maybe 72 hours or so. So if you want to get the podcast, or I'll put up a notice on Facebook and Twitter and stuff like that. Use the Podbean upload, please. Or you can go and use the podcast over at iTunes, which Thomas over at FYI kindly helped. Well, it didn't help set up. He set it up. Okay. And by the way, because I'm terrible at ciphering, I misspoke on the fundraising goal. It's 290. And I'm happy to announce that thanks to Charlene, it's not 290 anymore. It's 265. So thank you very kindly, Charlene. Thank you very much indeed. Hopefully we can keep knocking it down. I've had some notes from Steve in China. These are all well worth the sharing. There's a lot of work that went into them. And so I'm gonna to sort of wrap up the filibobster. Subject line: policeman, doctor, beggar man, thief. I listened to on the podcast to a call from Scott noting specifically the recent police shooting of a juvenile there. I write in the interest of continuing a necessary dialogue and not to be overly critical or analytical with regard to this one call. Okay, I thank you, Steve, for making that clear on the front end. Two broad issues struck me as demanding some sort of a response. Point one, since when have we generally assumed or otherwise expected that the use of force in a police situation is acceptable so long as it is intended to also be the application of incapacitating sort of option or outcome? If one intends to blow out a knee, is it just dandy to blow off a butt cheek? To weigh the obliteration of body parts and to call the exercise rational seems to me a tad insane. I'm wondering just how good of a shot one has to be so as to make the decision to fire a weapon, then to choose a particular part of the body in order not to end up killing the person. All of this before actually firing, of course, and in a tense situation. Fired weapons, it occurs to me, have a damning tendency not to be so cooperative unless the intended target just happens to be a target. I'm not so sure that even well-trained police officers are such experts, but considering the alternatives, one feels compelled to make reasonable suggestions. Though, after all, why bother? And with that portion of Steve's argument, I'm in agreement. I go back to something years ago when I asked that specific question of a law enforcement professional. He said, there's no such thing. He said, if you as a law enforcement officer draw your weapon, odds are you're going to fire it. And if you're going to fire it, you have to shoot to kill. Because it's a gun, and that's what guns do. When you shoot, you are shooting to kill. So I think there's truth and clarity in what Steve says there. Steve continues, there's no sensible argument demanding that officers be so heavily armed in the first place. There's also no good reason to expect that America's streets will ever be patrolled by the likes of anything remotely similar to a genuine peace officer either. But when we refuse to diagnose and treat individuals in need of counseling or mental health services, and then send public servants into the streets looking for trouble, only to soon enough find it, where's the mystery? Sooner or later, some lost soul, by rights a patient, is accidentally transformed into a threat, or an easy target. In either case, shot. In the tragedy, dead. Again, if society asks its trained police to also be trained mental health professionals, it definitely gets neither. Mm-hmm. Very true. Point two, seasoned veteran or green rookie. Since when do we allow a rookie to rack one up out of sheer ignorance? I realize that nothing of the sort has been established in this incident. One imagines, though, some poor bastard nearing the one-year mark, anxious to score that easy hit. Do we allow the hardened vet to take a few wild shots, get the last ones in right before retirement? To stave off the boredom, of course. Mellow the cynicism. Sorry. It is not acceptable for a police officer to use force of any kind when another course of action exists. Whether the result is legal, that's an entirely different matter. Deadly force? Well, really, since when has the use of a firearm aimed at another human being not been considered just plain fucking deadly? Agreed. Answer, when that person is a corpse. It is not acceptable, especially because it is not acceptable to us. End of discussion. As a society, as individuals, we have been brainwashed into believing that a perception of danger constitutes an excuse to act dangerously. Well, somebody should probably get that tattooed. As a society, as individuals, we have been brainwashed into believing that a perception of danger constitutes an excuse to act dangerously. When in fact, a perception of danger should probably trigger an absolute necessity to act rationally. And while this odd notion might be forgiven the average citizen, it can only lead to recklessness and paranoia within the ranks of the typical police department. When one is allowed the use of deadly force as a part of the job, one is therein entitled to be deadly, right or wrong. And seriously, Mr. or Ms. Cop, if you're too much of a coward to risk taking a bullet in order to keep the peace, find another job, a safer job, for everybody. And stop lying for each other whenever you murder another of our children. Regards, Steve in China. So true. So true. I would only add as a sort of postscript to that, Steve, that the behavior we see from police is the behavior you see from police in fascist authoritarian states. And we are one because we're an empire. And empires lean and trend toward fascism. And in our case, we pile onto that all the baggage of American exceptionalism, the oppression of natives, the oppression of people of color, the oppression of immigrants, the oppression of women, the oppression of the poor. And pretty soon, you've got the recipe for exactly what you described. With regard to James Comey, Comey's instant shit-canning ought to gum up that inconvenient investigationalization situation, all right. Now we can concentrate on the important stuff, shaking down the troops and streamlining current priorities comes to mind. Got to refocus, don't you know? Yeah. Steve's on a roll. Now, Bob, everyone knows you're talking about a routine extra-environmental admission of mud event. R-E-A-M, a ream event, get with the program. Ream, yes, nice. Well done. Terrace, meanwhile, says, guess who's going to replace the excommunicated members of the Scientific Advisory Board at the EPA? Answer, Christians. Oh, I'm sure they will be, Terrace. I am sure they will be. And that is a back reference to a previous note from Terrace called, saying, real Christianity. I apologize in advance, Tracy's call inspired this email last night. Terrace says, even atheists have been tricked into believing that real Christians, trademark, are better than garden variety Christians. My only difference there, Terrace, would be real Christians versus fundamentalist Christians. But I understand your point. If only the white supremacists who voted for Dumpster were real Christians, they would have voted for Bernie. They would support after-school lunch programs and Medicaid. I have some sad news for Tracy and others of the community. White supremacists who vote against their own interests just to spite inward loving liberals are real Christians. Christianity is whatever self-identified Christians do. Of course, I've said that for years. If you're a fundy who is screaming madness, or if you are the gentlest, mildest, meekest, diversity loving, non-racist, LGBTQQQ ally Episcopalian there is, the both of those people believe the same essential things that will get them to get to live forever after they're dead. It's a fact. I mean, it's just part of the rules. Anyway, Tara says, let's dig up the dead Indians buried underneath Wall Street and ask them what they think about real Christians. Let's ask the shadows burned into the sidewalk in Hiroshima what they think about real Christians. People who are good and decent people, despite their religion, not because of it. We shall overcome, says Terris. No, fuck that. We're all going to die because real Christians can't stop themselves from killing every motherfucking thing under the sun. It's a compelling argument. As far as for any of you who are having buffering issues, the TuneIn stream seems to work, although the White Rose stream keeps dropping. Thanks, Jack. Yeah, the TuneIn stream, what it's done is it has gone over and picked up the low-quality stream, which is apparently easier to carry. Meanwhile, Don says loud and clear on TuneIn, so if you're having trouble, run over to TuneIn. Or try to get the low-quality stream at White Rose. They're the same thing. Under the subject line, Trump fires Comey, Matt in San Francisco says, trenchantly and succinctly, this guy 45 is really a pus-filled boil on America's ass. That could not have been said more succinctly nor more accurately. Oh, and Clarity reminds me, yes, we had another little thing happen. A tunnel under the Hansford nuclear plant that was part of a facility that manufactured oodles and oodles and oodles of plutonium during the Cold War kind of collapsed. No, it didn't kind of collapse. The tunnel collapsed. And it wasn't just the front that fell off. But it's being reported as kind of a yay moment for Hansford because nobody got nuked in the process. You really can't overstate the value of not getting nuked in a tunnel collapse. Yeah. No radiation was released, and that's a big deal because that Hansford plant, well, it's contaminated as hell. A spokeswoman for the Department of Energy, speaking from the Hanford Joint Information Center, according to a Reuters story, said, the tunnel itself was breached. There was a 20-foot-wide hole. But there's no spent nuclear fuel stored in the tunnel, so that's cool. And of course, we can point out the fact that we wouldn't have to worry about these things if we, you know, didn't have this misguided notion that nuclear energy is a good thing. At this point in time, the Hanford plant is mostly decommissioned. Yeah. It is described as the most contaminated nuclear site in the United States. And that says a lot, considering all the other nuclear sites there are in the United States. And as sort of a postscript, the Reuters account notes that the evacuation didn't affect the nuclear power plant that Energy Northwest runs rather close by. Yay, a big part of Washington didn't get dosed with a terminal radiation load. It's a good thing. I mean, it is, right? Yeah. So we find ourselves at the top of the hour. And again, thanks to Charlene for jumping in taking fundraising down to 265. Hopefully we will get it down further as we go. And you, of course, are welcome to jump in and engage in conversation, because conversation radio is what we call what we do here. And I heartily welcome you to the conversation. And you can bring pretty much anything you want to the conversation. And I hope you will. The stress line number is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. That line, of course, is named after the inimitable Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. Gone but not forgotten. And it works for some and not for others. It's a telephony magic thing that I don't know, whatever. The number that works for everybody is 304-574-8178. I think 8481 was one of our old numbers. 304-574-8178. And then from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the account. And you can reach the program quite easily that way as well. So let's take a little break. It being Tuesday, we have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, something that I look forward to every Tuesday and Thursday. So, if you want to, light them up. And we will see where the conversation takes us. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
A stone. I will walk alone by the black muddy river and sing a song of my own. I will walk alone by the black muddy river and sing me a song. My own. When the last bolt of sunshine hits the mountain and the stars start to splatter in the sky, when the moon splits the southwest horizon with the scream of an eagle on the fly.
I slowly lay by the light of the evening star. Away on a hilltop sat combing her hair his fair hippopotamus maid. The hippopotamus was no ignoramus, and sang her this sweet serenade. Mud, mud, glorious mud, nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud. The fair hippopotamus he aimed to entice from her seat on that hilltop above. As she hadn't got a ma to give her advice, came tiptoeing down to her love. Like thunder the forest re-echoed the sound of the song that they sang when they met. His innamorata adjusted her garter and lifted her voice in duet. Mud, mud, glorious mud, nothing quite like it for cooling the blood. So follow me, follow, down to the hollow, and there let us wallow in glorious mud.
It's Tuesday, May 9, 2017.
Please, come to France. We want people working on climate change.
France votes for climate action in presidential election. This is by far the worst we've seen on this fire. Wildfires force evacuations in Florida and Georgia.
Really, an ongoing process here with all this flooding that's going on.
Extreme storms and flooding kill 13 in the Midwest. Time is running out to speak up for EPA regulations you'd like to keep. Plus,
if 97% of all dentists told you a tooth couldn't be saved, you'd pull that tooth.
Conservative group trolls Trump on climate change denial.
All of that trolling and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
This is a message for American researchers, entrepreneurs, enginers working on climate change.
What did he say?
I think he said enginers. I think
enginers?
I think he means engineers.
Oh, you think that's funny, don't you? This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I think you're leading again today with the effects of climate change that we are seeing in this country. Well, in the Midwest and down to the Southeast and just about everywhere else right now.
Yeah, pretty much. Floodwaters are beginning to recede across 6 Midwestern states after a slow-moving storm system dumped record and near-record amounts of rain from Illinois to Arkansas, triggering deadly flash floods that killed 6 people in Missouri and 7 in Arkansas over the weekend. That's in addition to 20 people who were killed the weekend before in floods that breached 7 levees on the Mississippi River. On Saturday, nearly 10 million people were under flood warnings, with more storms forecast on the way.
Gosh, I wonder if nearly 30 people were killed by terrorists over the past 2 weeks in the U.S., if we would do anything about it.
It's the opposite problem in the bone-dry southeastern U.S. On Monday, schools were closed and residents forced to evacuate in advance of a massive wildfire in the Okefenokee National Wildlife Refuge on the border between Florida and Georgia.
Where?
Okefenokee.
Okie-dokie.
Whipped up by hot, dry, windy conditions, hundreds of firefighters are battling the lightning-sparked wildfire. It's been burning for more than a month and has scorched more than 150 square miles.
Once again, if terrorists had forced the evacuation of hundreds or thousands, or burned thousands of acres, I wonder if we would do anything about it.
In politics, while President Trump decides whether the U.S. will remain in the historic Paris Climate Agreement, over in France, voters on Sunday made their choice by overwhelmingly electing Emmanuel Macron as the next president of France. Macron says implementing the Paris Agreement is a top priority for his administration. He's pledged to accelerate policies cutting France's carbon emissions and will double France's wind and solar energy capacity by 2022. During the campaign, Macron also made this pitch to embattled U.S. scientists.
Please, come to France. You are welcome. It's your nation. We like innovation. We want innovative people. We want people working on climate change, energy, renewables, and new technologies.
Wow, that's kind of snarky, telling U.S. scientists and engineers to come to France. We believe in climate change?
Yep.
Well, I guess it worked.
Meanwhile, Trump's Environmental Protection Agency is moving quickly to prevent the public from accessing federal climate science. Just days after deleting climate change from its website, the EPA, late on Friday, deleted its educational climate change website for children. In response, the city of Chicago has launched a mirror climate change website, rebuilding the EPA's deleted data.
And that was data that went back about 20 years, as I understand it. Just removed it. Teachers have been relying on that information, relying on those links. Now they're gone, but I guess they're in Chicago.
Yes. Trump's EPA also over the weekend dismissed half of the scientists on its key scientific advisory panel. The EPA declined to review the terms of 9 scientists on the Board of Scientific Counselors, which makes recommendations underpinning the agency's policies. Administrator Scott Pruitt reportedly seeks to change the makeup of the board and may potentially replace those scientists with representatives from polluting industries.
Because, of course, he will.
He has opened an official public comment period seeking your input on regulations that could be appropriate. Comments are being taken online at regulations.gov is known to watch.
And if 97% of all airline workers told you
they call themselves,
wow, ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.brat.
The more you ignore me, the closer to your time.
13 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. Yes, I know there's some buffering. No, I can't do anything about it, but I can't do anything about it except for apologize. And that I most assuredly do. Let's run over to the Skype line and check in with Clarity. Hey, Clarity.
Hey, Bob. How you doing today?
I'm here. It's kind of gray and miserable and sort of coldish, but nothing's particularly hurting, and I'm hoping for really good news tomorrow about my A1C.
Yes, that would be good news.
I'm not praying or anything, but I'm hoping.
Well, aren't you a heathen?
I are.
Well, then you pray to some kind of beast with big horns, right?
Or maybe a coyote or
okay.
Yeah.
Oh yes, that's right. I see you. I keep forgetting, Bob, that that's your main role in being a progressive is playing coyote and trying to mix it up, right?
Like Loki in Norse mythology. I should probably find a job where I don't have to talk. Like Loki in Norse mythology, coyote in the Native American pantheon is a trickster god.
Yeah, in the mystic tradition, it's the prophet, which most people don't understand. The role of the prophet, and that is a person who speaks truth no matter what the cost, even when it's not really a safe thing to do.
Well, there's safe and there's safe, isn't there?
Well, you are way back in a holler, so I guess, they'd have to send a special mountain-type drone to get you,
Yeah, mostly we see FA-18s around here about every couple of weeks.
All right. Well, see here, they just have to open up the floodgates, for the drain canals from Hanford and let her go.
Yeah.
Let her roll.
Okay, hey, but there was nothing radioactive released. Yay!
Well, and it's interesting that
at least
the spokesperson for Hanford, who's losing his hair. I don't know if that's related to his job, but and no offense to bald people, but he said, as far as workers go, non-essential workers, just check with the Hanford Facebook page. So I guess that's the default alert place. Now you just go to Facebook and they'll tell you whether you should wear your Geiger counter or just, take the day off.
Or put your head between your knees and kiss your ass goodbye.
Yeah. In my health news, good news is I'm not high in mercury. But in other news, I don't know what's causing, you know, my neuropathy to be really bad. But I'm supposed to get start with the pain management here soon.
Oh, and neuropathy is such a bitch.
Oh, it is, and it's totally invisible, you know. But yeah, there's some days when it's find your foot and doesn't make walking very much fun.
And there's a big difference between neuropathy and gout. You do not seem like a gout candidate.
No, I'm not. The other thing is I have to watch now my sodium levels, because one of my medications makes my kidneys kick off sodium. And I, you know, raised up that, you know, you don't eat processed food, you only salt to taste. And now I have to actually make conscious effort to add it on my food.
Wait, so you're supposed to add salt?
Yes. One of the medications I take for my mood swings.
Ah, okay. May I make a suggestion with warm weather coming? Do the hillbilly thing. I mean, this is not a joke.
All right.
Hillbillies will salt anything. Because I guess it goes way back to the origins of long before any coal was extracted here, Clarity, we were digging and drilling for salt, because West Virginia actually sits on an ancient or the remnant of an ancient saltwater sea.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Appalachia is the last place that has been rolled over by the crust.
And so we developed an affinity for salt. You ever taken a bite of an apple with salt on it?
Oh yeah, my dad and his brother were big salt, you know, people, and I guess they had hypertension, so I had attributed to that.
I don't do it very often, but sometimes it's kind of fun when it's, you know, just hot and nasty outside.
Oh yeah.
Salt on a watermelon. Salt on a big hunk of watermelon.
Oh, you're preaching the choir now. Where I live, we're famous for watermelons.
Well, one of those big sweet red beauties. With a little salt on it.
The Klondike melon or a a cannonball. Is a really good one too. But anyway, what was I going to say? I got a call yesterday, follow up from the state DEQ. Remember, I got doused by the local exterminator.
Yes. How's that going?
Well, what was interesting was it was a totally different person from the DEQ. And the person I reported to was the ag department's, hazardous chemical, department. And when she apologized that she didn't follow up, you know, because I left a message on the hotline. And I said, oh, well, so-and-so came by within 24 hours and took samples. And she was just like, oh, good. Well, I'll just follow up with so-and-so. And it was first name. She knew exactly who I was talking about. So it's a pretty small circle around here. And it's interesting, you know, the young blood coming along. To us boomers, our local irrigation consultant for the Extension Service, Oregon State, you know, Ag Center here, is a 24-year-old woman. She's having an interesting time with all these old school farmers, teaching them the new technology. And, but she's teaching them how to, cause we're not going to be getting any more water around here. They've got to use what they've got. And, so that gives me hope that there's, you know, some progressive people coming along, including this woman that was at the DEQ. You know, I thanked her for her time and being vigilant you know, about our environment, because, you know, these chemicals stay with us. And I can't say that it's the exposure I had that may have made my neuropathy over the top, you know, in the last week or so. But, you know, because that kind of stuff, you basically have to do a tissue sample, you know, take a chunk out of your liver.
Yeah, those liver biopsies are a real blast.
Yeah, it's kind of like being shivved, to use a prison term. Put a dull knife between your ribs. But it was interesting today, Bob. I believe in synchronicity, and right at 3 p.m. when I was getting ready to tune into your show, my computer did a mandatory restart, and I missed the first 10 minutes of your program.
Well, I was told that this latest update, Steve from Georgistan told me it's a booger.
Yeah, well, they put on some new malicious malware protection, so I guess we'll be protected from those evil Russians now. I like to tweet and put, you know, KGB tags on there. Except they don't call it KGB anymore. They don't call them KGB anymore. It's HG something, or it's a different, you know, three-lettered thing.
FSB.
Yeah, and it's interesting that Waters, Mrs. Waters now gets up there and starts doing what Pelosi should have been doing for the last 5 years, speaking truth to power. So Maxine, here's a atta girl.
Yeah, it's the frustrating thing for me is whether it's Bernie or somebody like Maxine Waters, and I do not wish to be understood as being ageist in this. You know, damn it if we don't need a deeper bench on our side.
Oh, you said that, and yeah, what happened to Dennis Kucinich? Well, he said he believed in UFOs, and all of a sudden, and he's a vegan, so pretty much, you know, you can't believe anything, you know, or his opinion. And Dennis, I think, has a lot of good ideas.
Well, what they did is they rat fucked Dennis. The Republican Congress did. They wanted him out of the way. So when Ohio got redistricted, they forced him into a contest against Marcy Kaptur.
Swing it, yeah.
And that was how they got rid of Dennis, because had Dennis's district remained the same, he would have been a congressman until he was 112 if he wanted. And he probably will live to be 112.
Well, in Washington, way back in the day, when Jolene Unseld, remember that, I think it was in 92, got raffled up with that mail thing, and her seat went over to Smith, who was voted the most conservative of the 94 Congress, and it took us two terms to get rid of her. And then we got Brian Baird, which was a Dino, you know, good guy, but he was really, you know, never really took anything beyond, you know, a corporate Democrat. In the third, you know, Washington third. But they've already started a campaign in Walden's district. We got a Democrat running now, campaigning. So at least got a name.
Yeah, and I mean, Jason Chaffetz has a challenger. You know, a lot of these weirdos are going to have challengers. It would be nice to see Devin Nunes have a challenger.
Yes,
but let me say this, and I'm not saying you're not. There's a big difference between having a challenger and having somebody who can challenge.
Yeah.
That may be too cute by half, but we need to run Democrats in races and get behind them sufficiently to win.
Well, and the thing is that the rest of the state, I mean, there's one district in the suburbs of West Portland, Killsborough area, that's a little bit of a swing district, but not really, that the Democrats could pretty much put some money into it over here on this side. But it's like 67% Republicans in my county.
Right. So, and how are you going to find the Democrat who can speak to them? I mean, I have a similar problem here. I don't care if a 45-year-old clone of Bernie Sanders runs in West Virginia. The minute somebody asks him about a woman's right to choose, and he says anything other than we have to protect the little precious little fetuses, it's game over. Because that is the way this population has been conditioned to respond. You cannot, and I mean, I'm not trying to pee in anybody's Wheaties, Clarity. But you cannot beat. I mean, the House always wins, and in a state like West Virginia, the House is the religion industry. And you cannot beat somebody who is supported by preachers who go into their pulpit every Sunday, Wednesday, and Sunday night and tell the faithful that if they vote for that there heathen that wants them to have a living wage and breathable air and drinkable water and good schools and health care, but doesn't care about the precious fetuses. Well, if you vote for that person, you're going to hail. You lose.
Yeah.
And it may not be as bad where you are, but from the Appalachians and down into the Confederacy, out through Texas, megachurch Arizona, Mormon Utah, Idaho, what have you, it is that bad.
Well, since Obamacare's come on, there was funding for mental health programs and things, community programs in Eastern Oregon that have come online. And some of my friends have went through college and trained and have gotten jobs here locally. But the previous senator that Merkley replaced, his name was Smith, I believe, and his son committed suicide while he was attending the local community college here. And so they have a Emmett Smith or something Smith, I can't remember, you know, a memorial fund that puts little suicide reminders in the bathroom stalls. You know, if you're feeling, call this number. But a lot of those things will go back to, you know, all these buildings they built will be empty because they can't fund the therapists and the social workers and the recovery workers that have come online since 2010. So, you know, I've been calling Mike Merkley's secretary and I said, I vote for sanity. You know, let's take care of the people that are, you know, here rather than kicking them under the bus or train, but you know, something that's moving around here besides a onion truck.
Well, so, and you know, we've got all the money in the world for bombs, bullets, missiles, aircraft.
I don't think people realize
But we don't have enough money to make sure that a poor kid can get two meals at school every day.
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head a few days ago that when you said that, you know, if we were all Vikings of Viking ancestry and we all were pretty much had the same amount of melanin, we'd have Medicare for all. But we, you know, we have all these immigrants.
Wow! Don't forget, we've got all these, we got all this diversity, and these inner cities. Jesus,
oh, yes,
I get tired of the dog whistle code.
Well, I'm surprised that Hatch didn't. Speaking of dog whistles, that Hatch didn't use the Simpson hind teat thing about, you know, once these people are on the dole, you know, you just can't get them off the dole, you know, for Medicare. What the heck is that all about? I mean, that's just total it's totally anti-human, which is Hatch. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, I mean, right.
It's Orin. My tweet was today.
I think these simple Indians were misled into putting up a monument to the Kenyan Muslim usurper in the wilds of southeastern Utah.
Well, he has a guaranteed annual wage. He doesn't have to worry about someone squandering his 401k. Now, does he? And he can go to Walter Reed or whatever, you know, place and have zero deductible.
He has the best socialized medicine this country can give.
Of course.
And he deserves it. Because he is deserving. Because he is one of the elect.
Because he's, you know, he doesn't take any outside money. He just does his job and calls balls and strikes, right?
No, that's John Roberts. Balls and strikes Roberts, right. Yeah. Oh, balls, right?
You're so inside baseball, Bob, you know.
Inside baseball, off in the weeds, yeah, right.
Of course, when you get so far inside, you get jock itch.
Let's don't and say we didn't.
All right. Okay. Well, you know,
I'm not a big fungicide guy. I'm sorry. I'm just, you know.
No. And just change your socks. Plenty, you know.
Clarity. I'm a Southerner. We don't do socks.
Oh well, I'm such a tenderfoot. I mean, I've done it certain times in my life when I was, you know, in college or something like that, where I shouldn't have been going barefoot in the dorm. But I've stepped on too many pieces of glass and nails and stuff that I just pretty much wear something that will keep my foot from going to the ER.
Well, I understand that completely, and especially with something like neuropathy down there. That ain't no fun.
Well, and living in the industrial section of town, you know, there's always debris somewhere along the road.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, we're not nearly as barefoot as most people think we are here in Appalachia.
No, it's too damn cold most of the year.
Well, and too damned industrially toxic, too. So there's that.
Oh, that's right. You can absorb that right through your pores.
Exactly. Clarity, it's awful good talking to you. I hope you have yourself a non-neuropathic evening, please.
That's right. And keep smiling and thinking the best, because it's all a holographic dream.
Bill Hicks, exactly. Peace be upon him.
And you too, sir.
And back to Bill in the Weather Center. You take care, Clarity. Bye now.
I'm
the one and only Clarity calling from eastern part of Oregon. So, like I said, I don't see that there's a whole lot to talk about in the Comey issue. Although some stuff is beginning to filter out, we'll probably have more by tomorrow. I have here, assuming... assuming that this is real, I have in front of me the letter to Comrade Kumquat from Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, Confederate Attorney General. The Angry Indian is with us. I'm going to be going to Angry in just a moment. But, here's what... As Attorney General for the white people, I am committed to a high level of discipline, integrity, and the rule of law to the Department of Justice, an institution that I deeply respect. Based on my evaluation and for the reasons expressed by the Deputy Attorney General in the attached memorandum, I have concluded that a fresh start is needed at the leadership of the FBI. It is essential that this Department of Justice clearly reaffirm its commitment to long-standing principles that ensure the integrity and fairness of federal investigations and prosecutions. The director of the FBI must be someone who follows faithfully the rules and principles of the Department of Justice and who sets the right example for our law enforcement officials and others in the department. Therefore, I must recommend that you remove Director James B. Comey, Jr., and identify an experienced and qualified individual named Rudolph Giuliani to lead the great men and women at the FBI. I added the Rudy Giuliani part, but come on, who are we kidding? Let's go check in with the Angry Indian. By the way, thanks to Andy the Angry Jew, who took us down to $215 to go in fundraising. We could the end of the tunnel's in sight with just 10 at 20, 20 at 10. And then one more person at $15. We can be even for the week. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all you do to keep this network on the air. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man. And hey, the Angry Jew. Thank you, brother. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And we got angry people. We got an angry architect, an angry Jew. We got an angry Indian. We got angry people here. I guess that's why we use hell. Why I use hell? No, I ain't happy to close the program sometimes.
You know, I mean, you got to be realistic. And I've been saying this for as long as I've been using this moniker, which has been since 1999 online. If you're not angry, you're not aware. You're not paying attention. You know, it's you're just saying that. Oh, you're angry. Well, yes. Because I see a whole lot of fucking unfairness going on, you know. I don't know where you want to start, but there's a few goddamn places I can go. I haven't spoken to you and haven't been online for a while because Ms. Angry Indian and I were sent tickets to a wedding in Montreal, so we decided to say fuck everybody and we split.
Cool. How's Montreal this time of year?
It was pretty all right. It was a little damp where I was, but I like that, so it wasn't a problem. But I have to tell you, I went and relaxed, and I really didn't expect it. The food was fucking fantastic.
Montreal's kind of known for that.
I got to eat poutine in people's homes, you know, sans the pork.
Well, I was going to ask you the poutine question, but I didn't know if that fell in, if that fitted within your dietary kind of universe.
Well, I don't have a thing religious or whatever the fuck thing about pigs. It's just I understand how they're raised. So it probably wouldn't have been an issue in Canada. But, you know, I know how they're raised down here.
Yeah, I didn't know if you had any vegetarian things going on with the dairy, with the cheese curds and the poutine. So, yeah.
I was a vegetarian for a little more than 20 years. But when I started doing community work in rural areas, not just Native American, but, you know, just, you know, poor folks, there's no vegetarian options unless you're just going to eat boiled potatoes and french fries all the time. I mean, it's just, you know, that everything was burgers and fried chicken and what have you, which is why the health of the people in those regions is so bad, because they don't have access to very much, and what they do have access to is not, you know, really sustainable food. It's not nutritionally dense foodstuffs. They'd do anything. I mean, I just saw some young people the other day. My wife and I were in a in a supermarket for a little while, and we just noticed how overweight all of the children were, you know, regardless of ethnicity. The only young people that seemed to be healthy, that seemed to be fit, obviously because of how they were dressed, and you look at their parents and you see what kind of, you know, vehicle they get into in the car park. They have a little more money. Obviously, the parents have more education. So, and you can look at what's in their baskets and what have you. They make better food choices, but they also can afford to make better food choices. But then there's the educational thing. And, you know, that's one of the things we noticed. People looked a lot healthier up there. That was one thing we noticed. But, you know, frankly, we went to relax and go to this wedding. I didn't really know these people, so I went along. And I didn't expect to, you know, but I can't say I really enjoyed myself. It was being away from fucking politics. Right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and this is the second night in a row somebody said that. You know, Scott from San Diego called in last night and said, yeah, I just took a little breather. And yeah. I understand that. It feels downright cleansing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I came back and I looked at some stuff and I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ, what happened? And, you know, there were some people up there, and I have to say this too, and folks really need to be conscious of this, especially in terms of what we just see today with what happened with Comey and all of these other questions that have been looming since the goddamn election and before. A lot of folks there are very sympathetic.
Yeah.
When they're like, they listen to it, they're like, oh, where are you from? And it's like, oh, you know, and they say, oh, not that happy with Trudeau, but maybe things will improve. And, you know, you do have a chance and things, things like that. The British is the issue. My wife speaks French. I don't. So I was only able to get by with, you know, could you hand me a glass of wine? Hey, how you doing? You know, oh, I like that. That's nice. You know, that type of thing. I couldn't really converse with anybody. But the British nationals that I met up there in Canada, they were very anti-Brexit, not very happy. They feel that living up to a lot of the expectations, especially in terms of energy decisions and these pipelines and what...
The end of the filibuster.
I used to be part of a political group when I was in Seattle for a bit, and we were trying to get people to be knowledgeable about the damage that was going on at that area. That was like 17 years ago, Brother Bob. And then this happens. And what's worse is that I have a good pal. He and his wife just actually bought a house on Whidbey Island, which is right there. You know, he just retired and he bought his dream house out there. Whidbey Island is right next to Hanford. And he was aware of, you know, the general thing about that. But, I mean, I'm kind of beside myself because, you know, Portland is not that far away from this. And they're talking about Fukushima equivalencies, which a lot of that is probably exaggeration. But, you know, this has been an ongoing issue. So then you got Trudeau and you got Trump who don't seem to give a damn about these things. And, yeah, you know, I just found that the limited conversation I had up there was much more knowledgeable, you know, to be frank with you, than a lot of the people who are living down here and have access to the news and are right in the United States and know far less than the average, you know, Québécois knows about these same subjects. It's embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. So,
well, they're more informed. I mean, look, with regard to the French election, the French managed to pass their one question IQ test that, you know, we failed. Because that's what it was, Angry. It was a one question IQ test. Are you smart enough to pick the right person?
Well, they waited to the very last minute. And this is where Macron was, am I pronouncing his name?
Yeah, correctly? Macron, yeah.
Because I'm trying to improve my French now after being embarrassed up there. And then it's not even real, like, well, I don't want to say real, but, you know, like French, it's Québécois, right? Yeah, you know, I mean, you and I have been paying attention to, and most anti-fascists have been paying attention to what's happening, because Le Pen is exceeding where her father wasn't able to, because, you know, because of his age group and a lot of those people who remember World War II hated him. So she's dealing with a whole new crop of French people who are being told by a lot of these older folks, you're supposed to have the country, and look, we're giving it to all these goddamn Algerians. And then remember what happened to the Pied-Nas, and they're throwing a lot of this stuff in there. You know, De Gaulle was an idiot, and that sort of thing. They don't have the education and the life experience to really understand what the fuck is going on. So it doesn't mean anything for them. Like young people now in Cuba, the Cuban revolution doesn't have any meaning for them. You know, they know a lot about the eras, but you know, the historical context is gone. So here comes Le Pen, Marine Le Pen. You know, she's not. She's at an age that works demographically. She dresses in such a way. She did the same thing Hillary Clinton tried to do without looking as matronly. You know, there's all of these factors. But Macron did not go into the provinces and say, "Hey, do you really, as a French person, do you really want to fucking go towards fascism? Remember what the fucking Vichy."
Well, but let's be clear about something, okay? Macron is certainly not the return of, you know, Charles de Gaulle, or
he's not Mitterrand,
and no. He's certainly not François Mitterrand.
No, absolutely.
See, I can do that thing.
But
what and there
the
are
only European state that I'm aware of marching anti-racist. So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. But
No. I was just going to point out that there are things that Macron is saying early on that are a little disturbing, because he's saying he's going to crack down on the ability of trade unions to engage in work stoppages.
Now, how the fuck is that socialist?
Well, he's not a socialist. That's what I'm saying. He's not a socialist.
But he's been talking. Like you're saying, he's been using that language, and that alone got him a lot of early voters, because they've been really disgruntled with their mainstream liberal / labor party. So they decided, okay, well, we'll go with him.
And he's saying
if I have to make a decision,
he's going to loosen burdensome regulations on French small business.
Which sounds like Trudeau.
Well, and I mean, it sounds like a Republican around here.
It also sounds like Clinton, right? And I'm talking about Bill, you know.
Yeah.
He did the same thing. He said, I'm a pro-business candidate. I remember watching him on C-SPAN, too, say that. And there were people who were like, oh, no. You know, you just hate him because you're a communist. And it's like, well, I'm not. But, you know, I understand your limited understanding of this. But, you know, the bottom line is the man said that he's going to support business. He hasn't said that he wouldn't. And then when he passed NAFTA and GATT, they were still trying to crawl with me because they didn't really understand what the fuck was going on. And yeah, in France, they're dealing with the same thing. You know, I mean, he is going to do pretty much what I think Sarkozy was doing, but more so that Trudeau was doing up in Canada. You know, he's going to pretend that he's going to, you know, listen to everybody and be fair, but at the same time, like Clinton, I'm going to have to make these cuts, and you cats are just going to have to deal with it, because there's an end game here, even if you can't see it. And when people are desperate enough for some sort of change or for some sort of order, you know, because we're dealing with a chaotic world situation right now. You got Trump fucking around here, firing people who are investigating him. At the same time, he's fucking around threatening North Korea. North Korea is unstable because they're just fucking unstable. Because I just heard today that the new person that they're looking at on the left in South Korean politics is willing to open communications with North Korea. So that's going to change policy.
And he also said in the fairly recent past, the newly elected president of South Korea, that South Korea needs to learn to say no to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
One wonders if he's prepared to say no, you know, to Comrade Kumquat.
Well, you know, I mean, if anyone who looks at the Asian news to some fair degree realizes that there's been various agreements that they have signed amongst each other. Like there was a an aggression pact that was signed between China, Republic of China, Philippines, Singapore, and I think I want to say Malaysia, but I don't hold me to that. But the bottom line was they did that amongst each other. It was never reported over here. And, you know, nothing came of it, right? Because it was President Estrada at the time in the Philippines, and he had a scandal. I mean, he showed up to his inauguration with three of his wives and all of his children, you know, his entire extended family, to his presidential inauguration. So it was just a matter of time before they got rid of him, because he was moving more towards mainland China in terms of their political and economic and Iran, for that matter. And it was just a matter of time for they got rid of him. But see, they do these sorts of things. I mean, you've got the BRICS going on, right? You've had ASEAN going on. But, you know, it still comes down to what the United States and Western Europe decides that everybody else is going to fucking do. And it's not really stable right now. You know, nobody really knows for goddamn sure. And when you have intelligence people who are going on Twitter and fucking, you know, pretty much saying, yeah, you know, shit is out of goddamn control. They know, and they also know how this shit affects economics. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if, I mean, what was it when I was away? Someone mentioned that Stephen Hawking made a comment that if we don't get off the planet.
We got 100 years to get off the planet.
Yeah. So, I mean, I give it about fucking 8 years before we're fighting over rice.
Well, not we, but they.
Well, no, I'm including we in this because it's a commodity, right? That there are American citizens that have economic stake in the production of rice, especially since the fact that Asia has been damn near decimated in terms of producing its own rice. Africa has almost been decimated in producing its own rice. And the rice that is produced in those areas is considered to be privately owned.
Well, not to get all History Channel apocalyptic or anything, but as we know, food supplies in major concentrated urban areas, New York, Boston, Philly, whatever, about 2 weeks. If there's an interruption, it gets interesting real fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why I'm against cities now. I've been against cities for about 12 years.
But the thing is, here's the part nobody talks about. It's not much different out here where I am. I mean, I've got a struggling little grocery store that's been a going concern for 40 years here, and for reasons of finance, can barely keep groceries on the shelves, and. On any given aisle, there'll be something I'm looking for, and they won't have it. Now they've still got it. They've still got the best meat department around here, so their meat case is full. But the freezer where the ice cream and all of that stuff is half empty. Various canned goods. No, but they do have about an aisle devoted to nothing but ramen. And that sort of ties in with something that Steve wrote in to mention just a few minutes ago. Steve in China, angry. Subject line, industrial fat. Steve in China said, I just have to say something here and now. Wealthy people are not fitter because they can make better food choices. They are fitter because they can make food choices, period. Poor people are dying for lack of nutrition. That's why they eat so much. Their bodies are starved for real food.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a ton of truth in that. You have to shop hard to find things that aren't just horse gagging loads of empty carbohydrate calories. But again, I mean, I've learned a hard lesson over the last 3 months about nutrition. And, you know, I'm down from 264 to 215. And I've learned that, you know, there are you can keep going if you pay attention to essentials and don't eat crap. So, you know, I've been on the yogurt, cottage cheese, and such protein as I can cope with diet. And, you know, I think I'm probably going to taper or plateau off around 215, 210, whatever. Hell, if I could get down to 210 or 190, it would probably be even better. But I have paid a lot closer attention to what I've eaten or what I'm eating and what I've chosen. And I can't tell you the last time I ate a potato chip. I can't tell you the last time, I can, because sometimes, when my blood sugar would plummet, yeah, I'd be on that Reese's cup like a duck on a June bug. It is not easy if you are not part of the wealth class to not eat junk.
Yep. For damn sure. I mean
it's great. If you've got a farmer's market nearby or something like that, that's wonderful. If we cooked like my hillbilly ancestors cooked and ate like they ate, it would be manifestly better. And I'm even including all the pork and the beef and the chicken and the eggs, because among other things, they weren't eating a bunch of chemicals inside those things.
Yeah, that's what I was saying about the pork up in Canada. You know, I didn't know. I just assumed it was the way to raise pigs down here, you know, which is right on top of one another, you know, wallowing in their feces where they're pumped full of chemicals and steroids and other antibiotics to keep them from getting sick, and where the worms are pulled out of the flesh after slaughter. I mean, I've seen a couple of vivisection films from pig farms and how they pollute the rivers in, what was it, Kentucky or Tennessee, this particular film I saw. It's been many years, and I haven't touched it since. I haven't bothered with it. You know, I mean, of course, most folks have a religious bit. And in the black community, because of the influence of the Nation of Islam, I mean, you either eat pork or you don't. You know, there's a very serious dividing line. But that was my thing. But I also, admittedly, have had choices. And being in Oregon, where I am in Portlandia, I actually have, opportunities. We have a lot of farmland around here, and we have local food. So, you know, I'm kind of gifted in that sense. But back in Philadelphia, even though we're surrounded by farmland, and very little of that actually came to, like, say, where I was in South Philly. You know, I mean, even then, the average person, you know, with the amount of money that they have left over after taxes and whatever union dues they're paying and what have you, you're still going to Kentucky Fried Chicken because that is enough to fill you on $6. And no, you're not healthy. And of course, your blood pressure is probably bad. And of course, you know, you probably don't exercise because you don't have, you know, time for a gym membership and all this kind of thing. And, you know, the air is bad anyway. And, you know, the conditions at your job are not good. But, you know, but that's one of the things I had gotten into an argument with a Republican about a month or so ago. I'm like, you know, you would think that somebody like Trump, who wants to talk war all the goddamn time, that you'd want a fit nation. You want an educated, thinking, you know, nation. So why wouldn't you, you know, want to improve the food, even the fast food? You know, why wouldn't you want to improve education? Why wouldn't you want to improve living conditions? That makes the entire nation, every component of it, powerful. I mean, it's kind of Kennedy-ish, you know, thinking. But he really argued with me about that, you know, only certain people deserve that. And we've talked about this before. How do you get over that hump? And then, you know, the lack of, access to just basic information that's not clouded with partisan nonsense. You know, I mean, even with the health issues that you mentioned in terms of nutrition, how is it helping the Koch brothers that so many of us are not healthy? What is their end game?
And you know, here's another question. And I'm not an economist, Angry, and so I don't. It's not rhetorical. I do not propose an answer. But is it really that much more expensive? Let's say, we're talking about, I'm not talking about cooking in your own kitchen. The reason people can't cook in their own kitchens is because they're being worked like draft mules out in the miracle of capitalism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I know the reality of it. But
ask anybody, Brother Bob, and I don't give a fuck what community. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, I was just simply going to ask, is it that difficult for restaurants to cook fresh and to cook, you know, I'm not one of these Alice Waters, you know, culinary malists, as Anthony Bourdain described her. But, you know, I mean, there are certain cooking practices that make things less healthy. But still, is it not possible to offer up food in a restaurant that can be grabbed on the fly, that is both of quality and nutritional value? Because you know what? The nutritional value of you blow through the McDonald's drive-through with mom and mom, or mom and dad, or dad and three kids. You're not leaving the drive-thru under $40. Mm-hmm. And there is approaching zero nutritional value in what you leave the drive-thru with after you have handed over your $40. Now, compare, and this, I mean, I use McDonald's as an example, but it's like, you know, the crap at Taco Bell. Taco Bell bears about as much resemblance to actual Tex-Mex or California border cooking or wherever Taco Bell originated as I do to the man in the moon. On the other hand, a little queso fresco, some refritos, and a real tortilla, it's relatively nutritious. But apparently they can't do that. Apparently you can't do that on a giant fast food model. I mean, I'm weird. I think about this stuff. I apologize.
No, there's nothing weird about it, because it's you know, that's why people, when they listen to us, sometimes they think we're all over the place, because there's more than one thing. You know, there's no one. You know, well, you may be a quick answer if you have the background. Sometimes the only reason I can talk crapola about this is because I have worked in professional kitchens. And, you know, you ask yourself after a while, why do other restaurants cut corners? You know, you've worked in one place, you work in this. And I worked at one point for a brief stint at a 4-star restaurant. You know, it wasn't long, because I really wasn't up to it. I admit that. It was a level of thing that I really wasn't prepared for. But they did give me a shot. And I have to say, their food was very expensive, but they also used very good ingredients. And I had a couple of conversations, you know, after work with one of the buyers. And this is why I'm actually even attempting to answer this. And he was trying to explain to me, and he eventually did. It took me a little time to learn that because of the system, because of capitalism, because of the way profit works out, if you actually try to, you know, again, it also has to do with where you're located, how much farmland, how much in terms of milk production that you have close to you, the quality of the milk production, the quality of the farming, you know, whether or not they really give a damn if the onions they're giving you are really good, and what they use for fertilizer and what have you, all of those factors. You know, as we joke here in Portland, you know, do you have a relationship with the farmer, with this chick breast? You know, do you know them? You know, asking the waitstaff, this kind of thing. All of that factors in. If you have access to fresh fish, to sailors or crews that can bring in fresh fish on a regular basis, and their prices are, you know, such and such and such, then you can offer a regular, you know, somewhat fixed price. If it's not the thing, you know, then you got to do a seasonal bid, which means that people who can only afford this actually, over time, you know, it dictates how much business, how much of this that they actually sell. And when you start to deal with the actual farms, and I did this, you know, woofing for a period, you start to find out that if you try to grow organically, you try to grow, you know, in a natural way, your yield, of course, is not like the guy that's using Monsanto's Roundup Ready or whatever the hell else that they got out there. And he has to actually, in order to make a decent living, has to ask for more than, of course, the person who's using chemicals and has a yard yield because they're spending less. But at the same time, charging, you know, whatever the hell the market will bear. It's a lot of different factors, but it doesn't help the consumer at the end. I mean, you know, they talk a lot of crap hole about, well, in the end, this helps you out because you can make a choice between going to Whole Foods or going to McDonald's. But of course, common sense says Whole Foods has the better choices, but how many working class families can afford to go and get a, we don't feel like cooking tonight, and spend $45.
Right, or you walk, or like the audio I had last night, you walk into Trader Joe's, and there's some white blonde lady telling you that we should never let you into the country, you know, because you look Muslim. And the woman says, yeah, I was born here. Oh, where are you?
Yeah, well, I mean, in Seattle, in the Queen Anne area, there's a Trader Joe's up there. I've seen that a couple of times because I shop there. It's not uncommon to find that type of bullshit while they're buying hummus. It's not uncommon to hear people talk shit about Mexicans while they're buying fucking, you know, bottles and jars of salsa. It's not uncommon. You know, it's one of the contradictions, again, that we need to fucking talk about. Because while, you know, we're right now talking about nutrition, you know, let's really, you know, fucking ask ourselves how this reflects the entire economic fucking system. You know, one of the main reasons that we can't eat any better than what we're getting is because of the choices that are being presented towards us. And we have to make a decision based on what we have in our pockets, on what we can actually feed ourselves and feed our families. I mean, I just visited a couple yesterday with my wife because they just had a newborn. So we went to go look at him. And they're doing their best to give him the, you know, unprocessed everything. She's grinding the baby food and all that kind of thing. You know, there's no Similac in the house, and she's breastfeeding, and they're trying to do the natural thing. But, you know, the husband told me, he goes, I don't know how long we're going to be able to keep up with this. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? He goes, it's actually costing us more to buy natural for him as an infant. And we're wondering when he actually starts to grow and we have to increase the food thing, what we're going to do. And, you know, people shouldn't have to make choices like this. But then you got these same folks who make the same sort of bullshit. And this is where I'm leading into, where they will make the argument, well, I should have the right to buy the best medical care that I can afford. I should be able to make a choice. If I want to buy cheap medical care, I should be able to buy shitty medical care if I want to. I don't want this goddamn Obamacare. Well,
yeah,
I
you know, just
care.
Yeah, just, you know, caveat emptor everything, right?
Right. So that's what I'm talking about, where the culture thing comes into, because you just said something very goddamn important, Brother Bob. It's going to cost you. Ask any guy that's dating a woman with kids, and, you know, they're hungry. What are you going to say? Oh, okay, no, I'm not going to feed your kids, right? No, you reach into your goddamn pocket. So you just went through that goddamn drive-thru that you probably were not going to on your own. But this is what the kids are demanding. So you spend about 40 fucking bucks. But if you don't have enough education, and I'm being straight up here, I had to leave the ghetto to understand this. That $40 could get me a good fucking meal with that same group in a decent fucking restaurant if I knew where to go and I had access to it.
Yeah, or
right?
You know.
But, you know.
Or an, I mean, I know I am overemphasized beans. Bowl of beans and cornbread with a nice green onion to gnaw on along the way. Kind of hard to argue with that, but it doesn't come in a cute little cardboard box.
Depends on where you are. You know, I mean, you got a falafel business out in L.A. I've heard about, called Falafel King, and you know, people there have gotten used to the idea of falafel. people. They don't hate Arabs necessarily. I mean, they're not even thinking about it. You know, it's an established business. They go there and eat their goddamn falafel. Now, if you're, you know, when I was in Ohio for a little while, I had asked somebody, we were just having a conversation about cuisine, and I'm like, well, I really like falafel. And she's, well, what is it? So I explained it to her, and she's like, is that one of those Arab things that they put into that flatbread? And they put that sauce on. Yeah, my brother was in, I want to say Afghanistan. My brother was over there. He said, yeah, that's the shit. That's the crap. They eat that in L.A.? And I was like, wow. I said, you've never had it. She goes, no. I said, have you ever had chickpeas? I don't think so. And I'm like, but how do you know it was bad? Well, my brother said it's bad. And them goddamn Arabs eat it. So I don't want anything to do with it.
Okay, so here's some funny for you. There's a couple of restaurants. There's one over in Beckley, and there's one in Somersville. I forget what the one in Beckley's called. The one in Somersville is called Alfredo's. And so, you know, it sounds all Italian, right? Well, guess who's running Alfredo's? An Egyptian dude. Guess what you can get at Alfredo's? Well, you can get gyro. You know, the ground lamb roasted with the lettuce and the tomato and the tzatziki on the with the folded flatbread, right? And
but it's known as shawarma in that world.
Yeah, shawarma, sure, same. But the thing is, people will go in there as long as they think they're eating Italian. Maybe Greek. But they ain't going to eat no Egypt food. Because they's Muslims. I mean, the guy in Beckley, the Egyptian guy in Beckley, started out trying to be a Middle Eastern restaurant. He had to shut down for a couple of weeks, retool it, rename it, put up pictures of guys in gondolas and striped shirts and straw hats poling boats through the canals of fucking Venice on the wall. And the menu's the same. They make a great pizza. They got a wood fired oven pizza oven. But you can get the shawarma / gyro. You can get falafel. You can get some damn grape leaves. You can and what's that dessert?
Oh, really?
Kunafi with the shredded phyllo and the sweetened ricotta. Or what the hell ever it is in the middle, and it's drenched in like rose water sugar syrup. I'm sorry, I get a little excited.
Well, I know because my wife's a Christian Palestinian, so when we visit family,
I can eat some of that. I'll crawl across ground glass for good falafel, but you know, then again, I'm a heathen here and don't Jesus enough to eat the right foods, Christian food. Yes, I know
because that's from motherland.
right,
eating lamb.
Palestinians been mashing up chickpeas since Christ was a corporal in the army of God.
Well, here's the funny thing: if you really want to get down to it, falafel was beans, and adds this spread across the Arab world, and they were cheaper for commodity, and then it became standard. You know that just became again culture, economics, availability, trade. You know, when you listen to businessmen...
Necessity.
When you listen to businessmen, and remember, people who fuck around in industry, and the people I deal with now are pretty much retired, and they talk a little freer. But they always said this kind of shit even when they were still working. That, you know, there is a good part of trade. It gets people talking. That's how you trade ideas. And they're like, you know, look at the different border areas. That's the interesting part of the world. You know, to anybody that's ever traveled any goddamn where, because things are mixed. You know, I was speaking to someone's wife. She just went, well, I can't say just. I guess it was a few years back. She went through Kyrgyzstan, which is, one of those waypoints. And she said the food was fantastic. And, you know, the people, the different, physical types and different languages.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're at that point in time, you're at one of those world crossroads because you're on the Silk Road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. That's a good historical point. Yeah, that's true. You know, which is something that Americans have a hard time relating to because you look at what history here, 1776, as opposed to what the fuck is going on over there. I mean, even with Italy, what, a little bit more than 100 years? Germany, a little bit more than 100? Portugal, how old is Portugal? I mean, Greece. I mean, you know, Greece, economically, you know, when they get along with Greece, they're a white country that's part of Europe. When they don't get along with Greece, they point out that the people that founded Greece were from the Lebanon, right? And they start talking about how they're really a Semitic people and they're like Turks and they're not really part of the European, you know, community and blah, 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 blah. Money. You know, what was it? Guns, Germs, and Steel? Was that the title?
Yeah, Diamond. Jared Diamond.
So, Jared Diamond. You know, I mean, you and I have had, you know, our different takes on that, but all of these factors factor in, you know, and then you got the wild card. You had the wild card of human beings that, you know, no matter how perfect the system might be on paper, human beings will fuck it up. So here you have the Trump administration. Here you have Trudeau. Here you have Macron. Here you have Theresa May in the UK. Here you got Turnbull, right? Yeah, I mean, you got all of these politicians who, you know, Duterte in the Philippines. What?
Who's going to come and visit and being an honored guest in Washington, D.C. Hot damn, I'm so proud.
Yep. So what are we to make of this? So then you got the beef with Turkey, and then they decided this morning, because I was leading to that, that they decided they're going to arm the Kurds. That they just insulted and killed a bunch of, just what, a couple of weeks ago, right? So, you know, what the fuck is going on?
Well, that, and I'm not sure. I don't remember if I mentioned it or not, but you remember during the election, all the shrieking about, ooh, Hillary's going to start World War III. She wants a no-fly zone in here. Goldman Sachs tapes. Ooh, Hillary's going to start World War III with the Russians and a no-fly zone. All it's going to take is a no-fly. Guess what the Russians did?
Yeah.
Imposed their own no-fly zone over Syria in which American aircraft are not welcome.
But that's okay. They're Russian. They're okay. Hey, they're pals of WikiLeaks now, you know? They're okay.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. The Chelsea Manning situation. What the fuck is going on with this? How did that happen? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I mean, she's still getting out, right?
Yeah. I just found out this morning. I'm just trying to figure out how that happened. And with that situation being what it is, I'm not saying that there weren't people working on her behalf. I mean, I've been one of the people I've been treating on her behalf and arguing with people whenever, you know, I could, who said that she deserved what she's getting. But I'm sorry, you know, as a person of color, there's a whole lot of fucking, you know, black and brown people that are still inside for shit that was a hell of a lot less than what the fuck she was accused of. And I would like to see some action on that. I would like to see some action on Leonard Peltier. I would like to see some action on Mumia Abu-Jamal. I would like to see some action on a lot of the people who are white that supported the Black Panther Party for self-defense.
Yeah, and don't bet the farm. I mean, but you know that.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm just saying, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, I was out there supporting her too because I felt that what she did was an act of conscience and it was something that the public needed to know. But at the same time, I know that as a Caucasian, she will come out and I'm not trying to be insulting. I'm just saying, you know, she can write a book.
Well, to the extent that her mind is still intact, I mean, solitary does bad things to the human brain.
That's right. This is why I'm saying what I'm saying. We had brother Albert Woodfox in there for 41 motherfucking years, solitary. We had his other co-patriots, the other Black Panthers, which, forgive me for not remembering their names right now, because they released one about 3 days before he died from liver cancer. The warden, they were a mark for release, and the warden said, I release him when I fucking feel like. You know, I mean, he was letting the Klan pretty much run his joint and shit, and decided that these Black Panthers were radicals, and he wasn't going to let them out because he was in a position to do so, and he felt that the federal government wasn't in a position to tell him what the fuck to do. You got situations like this. And what the fuck, now that I'm talking about this type of ridiculous ridiculous political bullshit. What is this about Steven Seagal being banned in Ukraine now, and people are upset about this because he's a friend of Putin? And why is this news?
If the earth opened up and swallowed Steven Seagal, you would have a hard time getting me to care.
The GOP really loves this this guy.
Oh, you know, and they love they love Chuck Norris, and they love Ted Nugent. And, you know, it's of a type. You know, tough talking, paternalistic. You know, manly men. Damn it! You know, you can't have people running around being all nuance and stuff. God damn it! Sometimes you just have to shoot people.
Well, I'd rather have a sissy who got the job done than one of these motherfuckers who just talk all goddamn day. You know, I mean, this grandstanding is ridiculous. And then even then, and I'm no supporter of the FBI. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, that's the federal.
Well, that's the thing. I'm having a hard time working up a sad for Comey.
Yeah.
But by the same token, this is pretty obviously some dirty, sleazy, filthy shit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one, apparently, while there is a letter from Comrade Kumquat firing him, it wasn't delivered to him. James Comey actually found out he'd been fired when he started seeing TV screens saying Comey fired while he was out talking to the troops in the field at the L.A. FBI office.
Yeah, well, see, one of the things I saw on Twitter is that Trump's personal bodyguard, this is what somebody is saying, is, you know, hand-delivered the letter to him eventually, you know, while he's at this event. And it's like, wow, okay. So, you know, I mean, what's the, what was his name, Cox, Archibald Cox? Was that his name?
Yes.
That Nixon fired?
Well, yeah, the Saturday Night Massacre, yeah. The New York Times has already fired a story. And let's remember, that was after a lot of shit had caved in on Nixon. That was a couple of years into his second term. This shit is going down a couple of months into Trump's.
Because, I mean, you and I were children when that shit happened. It was going to junior high. I had a teacher, my political science teacher, man, he was just like, you know, you really need to know what the fuck happened in Watergate. You know, he was one of those, you know, supposedly stereotypical leftist, you know, Jewish teachers that we had out there in the East Coast that was like, you know, you will know everything that I know before you leave this goddamn classroom. And he was like, you know, you have to understand what the fuck happened with Watergate and how close we came. You know, I learned
well,
most of
and,
I know
and
about
see,
Kennedy.
That how angry that how close we came part is particularly relevant here because we're going to find out how close we can get. Because, see, the problem we have is that as all of that Michigas of Watergate unfolded, you actually had a Congress that could finally be persuaded to act within the ambit of its constitutional mandate. I will continue to say, you do not have that in this Congress, okay? This Congress, if Jesus H. Christ came back tomorrow and looked at the Congress and said, okay, boys, you're all Christians, it's me, and I'm telling you, you got to impeach this guy. The second come Jesus H. Christ would be wearing orange in Gitmo with his head in a toilet before he could say, take me back, daddy. Okay? This Congress has no interest in acting within the purview of its constitutional authority. And realistically angry, why would they? They're getting everything they wanted. They're getting ready. I mean, they've wealth transferred $800 billion of Medicaid into $600 billion of tax cuts, for fuck's sake. Okay? They're getting ready to run a tax cut package that's going to make George W. Bush look up and go, God damn, that takes some balls.
But what gets me is that they're pleading victimization. The whole fucking time that they're being hated, that they, you know, the Democrats just don't want to work with us after all the obstructionism, right?
Right.
You know, all the insults to the Trump administration and shit. I mean, insults that had nothing to do with his actual policies. And fucking here they come now, gutting everybody, pulling us all by the fucking short hairs, and saying, hey, you know, you're hating us because we're trying to fucking help you.
But I don't know if we that's what I keep trying to drive home, and I don't know if it's getting there. I know where I am in my head. You know, I said months ago now that we are not headed toward a constitutional crisis. We are in one.
Yeah, but if you don't acknowledge it, like racism, like sexism, right? Like religious motherfucking bullshit parody. If you don't want to admit it and you continue to go on and pretend that nothing's fucking happening, you can go through a hypernormalization of pseudo normality. But in the goddamn meantime, the soft white underbelly of this bullshit is, it's not motherfucking working. And that these biases are working on the personal fucking level where people are being denied services.
So what's going to happen in the Senate, Angry, when Trump sends up Rudy Giuliani to be the director of the FBI?
You know, I'm wondering about that because...
Or Chris Christie.
See, they were supported Giuliani before they were supported Christie, because the fact is, you know, Christie just looks weak.
Or Chris Kobach. How about him?
I don't know enough about him, per se, to say, like, where they will want to stop him. The only thing that they will go against Giuliani on is his flip-flopping in terms of him searching at one point for a deal a few weeks ago to cover his own ass when it came out about Flynn and Manafort, because he was connected to this. He also has worked as a foreign agent, taking money to represent the MEK, the MEK. You know, the Iranian group that's communist, that's anti-Iranian, right? They killed two CIA goddamn officers and shit, and this motherfucker was over there lobbying for them. So he's also part of this. So, you know, that might come up as an issue. But would they actually stop him on that basis? You know, I would like to say no, but frankly, probably not. Probably not. You know, Christie just comes across as, like, you know, somebody chasing after a fucking lollipop who can't get his goddamn tie straight, who will say anything to get, you know, your concision at the time, and then go into his back room with his lieutenants and fucking talk about how to get you fired from your motherfucking job, like he did with the scandal over there with the gate thing in Jersey.
Let me slide over just a little bit and share with you an excerpt from the termination letter that had Trump's signature on it that was addressed to Comey.
Mm-hmm.
While I greatly appreciate, you got to do it with the Trump voice. While I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I'm not under investigation, I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you are not able to effectively lead the Bureau. Hold the damn phone for a minute, okay? He concurs with the Department of Justice?
There, yep.
Sessions cited Rosenstein. So Rosenstein and Sessions, if you read this closely, went to Trump and said, Mr. President, Comey's got to go. Oh, I concur, definitely concur. Slow in the driveway, I concur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most transparent, bilious piece of mendacious horse shit that's come down the pike in quite some time. Like the president was not exercising his authority, he was doing a favor for Sessions and Rosenstein. And then, like I said early on, I don't know if you heard, and I'll just reiterate for those who did, or maybe I was buffering, who knows anymore. The presence of Rosenstein's name in this process says that they can talk about it being about misstating Hillary's emails all they want to. But Rosenstein is the man who's in charge of the Trump-Russia investigation for now, because Sessions is conflicted out. So the mere presence of Rosenstein in this process says that the Trump-Russia investigation was part of the consideration. Mm-hmm. If it's just a reference to Sessions, you can't make that same claim. But the Rosenstein reference guarantees that it was.
Because he's the firewall. He's the cutout. He's the cutout. He's the cutout. Right? You know, he's the cutout. Because, you know, no matter where you go, it would have to stop at him. And he'll eat it. Or try to, if there's anyone under him that he can get to, you know, well, hey, man, you know, do me a solid. Fall on your sword for this. And, you know, 5 years later, you'll...
And while we're at it, let's make sure we understand that that statement, that letter from Trump, that damn thing was written by Steve Bannon.
Well, even so, I would like to see what would happen in an investigation, because that's a legal document. He's saying that the Justice Department gave him the go-ahead, that they gave him enough counsel and enough, you know, whatever, to make this move. Now, Sessions, like you said earlier, recused himself from anything to have to do with any Trump investigation, right? And then you have the other name. So then you turn around and it's like, well, who exactly did he consult with? It couldn't have been Sessions, because Sessions said that he left himself out of this. It totally goes with your, you know, with your theory here, your suggestion. It's as clear cut as goddamn be. But as you said earlier, what will the Congress do about this? Will anyone in the Senate stand up and say anything? Is there anyone who can be counted on to do the right thing within the cabinet?
And the quick answer, Angry? No.
No. You know.
Okay, well, so whoever goes up there is going to be confirmed on a 51-49 vote. Unless, you know, Quisling Joe Manchin gets a serious case of the feels for Christie or Giuliani or who the hell ever.
Well, I'm going to tell you the truth. Now, I saw this again today, so I'm going to assume that there's some legs to it. It was before I left. Somebody, and I've seen a couple of tweets like this. You got black Republicans that are pushing for Sheriff David Clark.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine? We'll have people dying on the floors of federal prisons all over the country.
Yeah. You know, because he is a black sheriff. His whole agenda is, you know, I'm in charge of the plantation. I'm the boss nigga. And I'm going to go out there and make sure that these blackies stay in line.
And I got a big hat.
And I got a big hat. And he's always posing with some sort of, you know, thing in his office. So, you know, some sort of phallic symbol in his office. So, you know, that they would like him, because this way he could stomp on all the blacks and the immigrants and the Asians, the Southeast Asians anyway, you know, that they want to. And there wouldn't be a goddamn thing that people of color could say about it, because the first thing Trump would do is, like he does with Omarosa and with Betty DeVos's husband and Stephen Bannon's brown comfort, he points to them and says, we're not racist. It was the same thing W did, remember? Oh, I got blacks in my department. I have Latinos in my sub-departments. I have Asians in my cabinet. I'm not racist. What do you mean? I eat rice and beans. I'm from Texas. What are you talking about? Right? And, you know, the Tea Party said, yeah, you're racist for calling us racist. You know, you goddamn cultural Marxists. So, you know, it's the same fucking thing, because, you know, David Clark believes in all of that shit. But then again, so does Christie. And when it comes to Giuliani, you know, everybody's a traitor except for him. Everybody except for him in the far right. You know, he doesn't have anything to say about the Klan when you ask him directly. As far as he's concerned, every young black man in the country is anti-white and anti-police and anti-Republican. You know, he talks a big moral game. I know he likes to go and drag every now and again and kiss Trump. You know, this video about that, which, you know, hey, I don't fault him for that in any way, shape, or form. But it's pretty funny when you go against gay people all the goddamn time, though, and you wear drag. And at one point in New York City, he shared a house with two gay men, a couple. But then he was working against gay rights at the time. And matter of fact, one of the people who worked for him that was helping work against gay rights in New York City, because I remember this, he went up to Massachusetts and married his cousin and then was asked about this by the gay press. Well, how do you work for the Giuliani administration and you're anti-gay and you know, you're doing this? He goes, well, my personal life has nothing to do with my politics. But he's talking moral kick. And he kicked his own kids out of his house one time to fuck around with his mistress. And then he ended up marrying his mistress. So, yeah, you know, then he said he was against the mob. But he didn't really go after the mob. Went after black folks, though. So, yeah, as the head of the FBI, Nixon was a lightweight with what the fuck would happen to my community with him as the head of the FBI. Well, anybody they pick is going to be dangerous to my community, including Clark. It really doesn't goddamn matter, does it?
Let me add one more. Let me add one since I've got my tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqued moon and stars and the will thee kiss me in the dark baby written in glow in the dark paint across the front on, and my busted magic eight ball with the that always says answer hazy ask again later. Let me add one more into this. When the criticism starts tomorrow. The first thing out of the one of the first things out of the White House's mouth, and of course out of Fox, will be, "Well, yeah, he fired him, but Bill Clinton fired the FBI director too." Guaranteed.
Yeah, but if you asked him what the circumstances were, does it matter? He was a fucking Democrat. The head of the Klan did that. And you don't want to take responsibility. Yeah, I know.
And Sessions and William Sessions was and William Sessions was canned.
Was canned.
Now we're echoing. William Sessions was canned when he said when it turned out that he had engaged in some dodgy ethical business to keep from having to pay taxes over using an FBI limo. And build the government for the security fence around his house and arranged business trips so he could go and meet with relatives in given places. So, yeah, that was a real reason. Being mad at the FBI director because it comes out that you're being investigated in two separate district courts, that's not quite the same thing.
Well, as you said, I mean, I don't know how else to put it. My homeboy that I talked to about this sort of thing. I mean, we've been in a constitutional crisis the first week this man came into office. And if the Congress is not willing to do anything, and as you mentioned, you know, if the Senate is not going to stand up and demand, at the very least, a fucking official and public explanation, a transparent explanation about, you know, why he's doing things the way he's doing and how his family has been, you know, attempting to profit off of this. Can you imagine if the Obamas had put a fucking ad for jewelry and dresses on the goddamn White House server or ads for Mar-a-Lago and the State Department goddamn servers? Do you think we'd ever hear the end of that?
Sorry, no. Uh-uh. Well, Angry, I'm going to run along just to make sure a few other people have a chance to get in if they want to get in on the conversation. But it's been a dandy.
Okay. You know, it's good to speak to you, and I'm you know glad you're still with us and you're doing all right. And I hope Agnes is cool. And I'm going to say as usual to everybody out there, I know it's tough, but if you can, you know, come up with a couple of coins to keep this man on the air, hey, the Angry Indian would really appreciate it.
Thank you, Angry. Thank you very kindly. I do appreciate it. You have a good evening, and give my best to Mrs. Angry and. Glad to have you. Glad you didn't decide to stay up among stay back there up among the Quebecois and learn to speak real good French. You take care now. Our buddy the angry Indian, accept no substitutes. And good news, Steve and Karen and Ms. Cletus and little Cletus and little Twiggy, they're both good puppies. They're very good puppies. Have taken us down below the $200 mark. We're at $195. So, that actually gets us into tonight's fundraising. So if we could take that down another hunk or two, that would be lovely. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. All the lines are open if you want to get in on the conversation. It doesn't matter what, you know, people want to talk about Comey, we can talk about Comey. I don't know, is it stunning? It's sleazy. I mean, the entirety of the letter, this is the entirety of the letter. Dear Director Comey, I have received the attached letters from the Attorney General and Deputy Attorney General of the United States recommending your dismissal as Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. I have accepted the recommendation and you're hereby terminated and removed from office, effective immediately. He wanted to use his signature line from The Apprentice so badly. You're fired. While I greatly appreciate you informing me on three separate occasions that I'm not under investigation, I nevertheless concur with the judgment of the Department of Justice that you're not able to effectively lead the Bureau. In other words, I just found out that I might not have been under investigation then, but I fucking am now. And we got to stop this, or else America won't be great again and we won't build the wall. It is essential that we find new leadership for the FBI that restores public trust and confidence in its vital law enforcement mission. I wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. And yeah, I mean, we got to take into account that it's not like James Comey's going to be eating beans. There's them beans again. He's got a couple of multi-million-dollar mansions out there. I mean, he done good while he was general counsel at Lockheed Martin. Real good. But it still smells to high heaven. Because this administration is one great, big, roiling, boiling, walking, talking constitutional crisis. And I wish to God I could give you some little ray of sunshine hope that said that you could count that there was even a 10% chance of being able to count on the House of Representatives to do the right thing. But this house ain't gonna. And the amount of damage that can be done between now and early January 2019, assuming the Democrats are able to retake the House, which is still long odds against because of gerrymandering and voter suppression and Citizens United. Well, and the thing is, we don't say how much damage the Russian meddling did. Never mind the election. How many people are active agents of Putin within the government of the United States? What was it, 2014, that said coming in for... Yeah, that happened. That was real. And then there's... which, more and more of which seems to be confirmed on an almost weekly basis. And that is frightening. What is it that's keeping the pee-pee tape, the pee-pee video, from being released? What is it that Trump is doing or not doing that is keeping Putin from releasing that video and any others he may have of Trump engaging in skeevy, dodgy, perhaps criminal conduct? I don't know. I don't think any of us do. Oh my goodness, it's Todd. Hey, Todd.
Bye, man.
Did you enjoy Washington Journal this morning?
Oh, I thought about you. Oh, I couldn't believe it. 7:30, they cut off the ne'er-do-wells, and they went straight to coal. It was very interesting. And, yeah, you know, it was it was breathtaking. Let me even put it like that.
But yeah, you kind of saw it up close and personal, didn't you?
Yeah, and you know, some of the callers that heard probably, because it takes a while to get on the air, you know, people start calling, I guess, at 6:53 for the 7 o'clock show. But one woman called in, and she was saying, well, I live in Florida, but, you know, my husband, he would keep the whatever going, the coal thing going for the people to work. And she was talking about the families. So, you know, it's a complicated issue. But I didn't hear her say anything about the polluted environment or anything like that. But yeah, of course, I thought about Appalachia or Appalachia. What's the correct pronunciation, by the way?
Yeah, tomato, tomato. But
okay,
around here, Appalachia.
Okay, I was just curious. I know it's kind of late. Not, you know, the buffering. I didn't catch everything you were saying, but this is just. Oh, and by the way, I just got back from the pig. I did get some connected today.
Did you?
I did, and I was. Oh, I'm looking forward to it. I haven't. I'm looking at it right now. So, yep. And yeah.
Oh, I'm excited. Really, I want to. I can't wait to hear.
Yep. I can look at it and see that. This looks like whole hog, like sausage. You know, it looks really good. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I even went on the website, and you know, I like the kebabs, and they had a kebab recipe. I mean, I didn't really need the recipe, but the picture looked good, and that's what I was thinking. You know, one of the things I'm going to make with it.
It's gonna be there for a while, so I would suggest just letting it be its own thing. You know, appreciate it for itself on the first time through. It's a 1 pound package, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So take half of it and just put it on the grill and just grill it till you got some nice grill marks on it. Take the other half and put it in an iron skillet with a little bit of water and just let it slow simmer for a while. And after it's good and hot and been doing it for a while, just kind of poke the Kaneka with a fork to let a little bit of the excess grease out, and just snack.
Get to know it, huh?
Yeah, or on a biscuit, or you know, with a nice piece of sourdough or something like that. Because it's got a flavor profile unlike any sausage you've ever eaten.
I really believe it. I mean, I was looking at it and I was reading the label, and it doesn't have that many ingredients in it, which means it's probably really tasty, you know. And so I'm excited. And I got I followed your recommendation, and I got the Cajun. Next time I'll probably get the the hickory smoke. I don't know.
All hickory smoke, but there's regular spicy and Cajun. And then there's the more kielbasa sized, and then the ordinary sized is about the size, about as big around as something between maybe a quarter and a nickel.
Oh, you like this. So I'm looking at, like a crazy person, I'm just looking at the whole case. You know, they have so much meat. The pig, but people don't know, the pig is like, they specialize in fat back, like all the kind of shit that's not good for you. And they have a whole wall of fat back and pork and pig's feet, all kind of shit. So it's almost like, you know, when you look at too much, it's almost like overkill. You can't focus on one thing. So here comes the butcher dude out of the back. And I'm like, excuse me, can you tell me where the Kaneka is? And he smiles. He goes, yeah, I'll show you.
Yeah, I'll show you. Somebody got a new initiate to the club.
Yeah, you know, he looked at me like, oh, you're going to like this. You know what I'm saying? He gave me a little nod. I was like, uh-oh, I'm onto something. Okay. So I'm looking forward to that. But this Comey thing, I know you only got a couple of minutes, but you know what? This thing, I really believe that this is so big that I don't know if they're going to allow us to know how big this thing is, because those people don't fuck around. They do that umbrella, and think of what they're doing is cheap. Blackmail's cheap. And I think it's so encompassing, that it's really going to shake. I mean, look at all these dirty ass people. I mean, I always thought Comey was being compromised. I really did. And I heard you say it the other day, and I always thought that too, because that was just too strange. See, that's what they do. And if somebody blackmails you, they'll drop a little hint, like, don't forget we own you. You know, you'd be coasting along for a couple of months.
Yeah, nice house you got there. It'd be a pity if it burnt down.
Right, that type of thing. So,
he was so bizarre. Especially in the opening portion of his testimony, the fast talking, the pressured speech. If there had been a polygraph there, it would have blown up.
Right. Right.
And sometimes, to his credit, okay, I don't want to act like he's just, you know, whatever, but sometimes somebody who knows something that is terrifying will behave the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Just to try to get in and out without, you know, getting a horse's head in his bed.
And you know, just a little caveat. I've been studying Trump's demeanor and his language, and he's one of these evil people that tells you what he's going to do and laughs about it. You know, like the guy at the bar, like, ha ha, you know I'm gonna burn your house down. You know, that kind of shit. So just like with the I love you undereducated people, that kind of thing. Now he's been telling us, oh yeah, you know, Russia, oh, you hack Hillary, you know, and it's rigged, and if it's not, you know, if I don't win, it really is rigged. You know, all that kind of shit. You know, look back at the things he's been saying. Then with his snake message, and that's one of my mother's favorite stories. You knew I was a snake. You know, I told you, what the fuck? You knew I was a shark. You knew I was a snake. He's telling people. So I say all that to say, this guy is just, remember when he said, and when I told my people, be careful when you go to Russia, because they have these pinhole cameras and, you know, there's, because, you know, you can put a camera anywhere now, you know, it doesn't matter. But think about it. He wants all these leaders to meet him at Mar-a-Lago. And I bet you he has a stingray set up or something like that, because his buddy Rudy, remember Rudy, when he left mayorship, he got in hooked up with an internet security type place. See? And the people who do internet security, the flip side of that is they're the best hackers. You know, that's what they do. So what I'm saying is that he has the whole place, you know, he's listening to all, any kind of electronic transmission coming out of there. His people are on it, probably. You know, that's what I'm thinking. I've been hearing other people talk about it, but that's just the way he's sleazy. He's paranoid, he's sleazy, and he's able to do that because he surrounds himself with those type of people. So, and he has the wherewithal, so he probably got a briefing, one of his minions got a briefing about Comey's, like, yeah, well, you know. And think about it. That's the ultimate fake-out. He said, you know, he dropped a dime on Hillary, right? He's like, yeah, well, you know, Hillary's doing this to deflect, like, not to let. Because you don't ever, when you're investigating someone, you don't want them to know that they're being investigated. Because they might run or do whatever. So when they come to lock you up, they want to get you. So this shit is Clancy-esque. This is Tom Clancy-esque shit. So, you know. So that's why I got some Kaneka and oh, man. Things are jumping on my end. You will not believe. Mm-mm-mm.
Well, just. Man, oh, man. Yeah, just enjoy it. And, you know, that's one of those little mental health breaks.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is. I'm getting an ice break, man. I got my old friends coming out of the woodwork.
Oh, cool. Well, once you've had your own experience with this, you're going to go back and you're going to want, you know, your old friends show up and you're going to like, yeah, let me put this on the grill. Now,
yeah.
And to put it, you know, to put it on a hoagie roll with some sautéed green peppers and onions and mushrooms.
Mmm.
Yeah, that's real serious. Good.
That sounds delicious.
All right, Todd, we'll talk a little bit more later. You take care, buddy.
Okay, man.
Email me when you taste it. Don't wait for the program to come on. I'm excited for you.
I'm going to do that, man. I'll talk to you.
Later. Bye now. Okay. My buddy Todd calling from South Carolina, Stan. Time to get out of here. Thanks, everybody, for bringing us down as far as you did. It is much appreciated. We will begin the program tomorrow based on what the overnight crew does. At or below $395 in fundraising. It'd be great if it was just $200 for tomorrow, but that may be too much to hope for. But thanks to everybody who brought it down as far as they did. Thank you very, very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox, Ben Birch, working hard on the White Rose server. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.